Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 103.
Let's dive straight into a moment that really defines Sima Yi's whole approach here, the Golden Helmet incident. This is right after a failed attack on Shu. Sima Yi got ambushed. He's retreating hard, totally alone.
Yeah, it was a complete rout, disaster. And Liao Hua, one of Shu's generals, he's right on Sima Yi's tail, sword out, ready to finish him. Sima Yi manages to dodge around this big tree, and Liao Hua just swings wildly, gets his sword completely stuck in the trunk.
Just pure luck.
Maybe luck, maybe instinct, but that second saved his life. But Sima Yi, even then, he's already thinking about the chase, about how to escape properly.
The misdirection.
Exactly. He knows Liao Hua will be looking for him, so he takes off his fancy golden helmet, the Jinkui, and deliberately throws it off to the east.
But he doesn't go east.
Nope. He immediately turns and rides west. Classic feint. Liao Hua finds the helmet, thinks, the prize, the general, he went east, and wastes all that time chasing a ghost.
Brilliant. So the trick works. Liao Hua comes back, probably quite pleased with himself holding this helmet.
Fates.
Head merit, right? Like he got the top guy.
Yeah, he thinks he's got this huge trophy. But the real win for Shu wasn't the hat. It was the grain. They captured something like over 10,000 shik of grain. That showed Shu really had their supply line sorted out.
That's a massive haul.
Huge. But that helmet, it wasn't just a trophy. It became, you know, a symbol. Sima Yi's failure, right there in metal. And you can bet Conming filed that away for later use.
A psychological weapon waiting to happen.
Definitely. They weren't just fighting over land. They were playing head games, using personal stuff in their grand strategy.
And what's really interesting is, even with this huge grain win, the sources say General Wei Yan was already complaining, not happy with how things went down.
Yeah, you see that internal Shu tension bubbling up right away, even in victory. Definitely foreshadowing problems for Conming later. But let's get back to Sima Yi. He gets back to his camp, probably feeling pretty humiliated, right? But his personal failure, it instantly gets overshadowed by the bigger picture.
Because the emperor's message arrives.
Exactly.
Right.
An imperial edict, straight from Cao Rui. And it basically lays out Sima Yi's new strategy, confirming that huge threat from Eastern Wu.
And the order is?
Short, simple, absolute. Hold firm, do not fight. Jian Shu Wuzan. That's it.
Sure.
Sit tight, dig in, build walls. Don't engage Conming. And this wasn't just military advice. It was political cover for Sima Yi. Now he could tell his own eager generals, the ones wanting glory, sorry, emperor's orders.
Ah, clever. So his patience wasn't just about military tactics. It was political maneuvering, too. Using the emperor's command to justify this super defensive posture.
Precisely. Deep trenches, high ramparts. He knew Wei couldn't afford a risky fight in the west while Wu was attacking the east. He just had to be, like, a rock. Unmovable.
Okay, so if Sima Yi is basically playing statue in the west because of the east, we need to look east, right? What exactly was going down between Wei and Sun Quan?
Yeah, the east was exploding. Emperor Cao Rui himself took charge, leading troops to the key city of Hefei. And he sent other generals, Liu Shao and Tian Yu, to shore up defenses elsewhere.
So Wei's reacting strongly.
Very. And they actually strike first. Really sharp tactical win. General Man Chong had this idea for a surprise night raid.
On the Wu Navy.
Yeah, their base at Lake Cho. Man Chong and another general, Zhang Qiu, led it. Caught the Wu forces completely off guard. Burned tons of ships, supplies, grain. Huge blow. Zuge Jin, the Wu commander there, had to flee. Big morale boost for Wei.
Okay, so Wei's feeling pretty good. But then they run into Lu Xun.
Yes. The genius of the East. Lu Xun sees Wei getting maybe a bit overconfident after that raid.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes up with this absolutely brilliant counterplan.
What was it?
A pincer movement. He asks Sun Quan, basically, pull your troops back from sieging Xuncheng. Then have those troops swing around and cut off Wei's retreat path. Meanwhile, Lu Xun himself would attack from the front.
Boxing them in.
Totally. If it worked, Cao Rui's main force.
Yeah.
Trapped. It was a potential game changer.
Sure, yeah. Fate, maybe. The messenger carrying this super detailed plan, he gets captured by Wei forces.
No.
Yes. And Cao Rui himself reads the whole thing. He's apparently so impressed by the strategy, the elegance of it, he calls it Miao Xuan a marvelous calculation.
Wow. So Wei knows exactly what Lu Xun is planning. Every detail. Which leads to the most amazing part of this whole Eastern situation. Lu Xun's reaction. He finds out his plan is blown. Summer heat is making his troops sick. Zuge Jin is panicking, saying, we gotta retreat now.
Yeah, you'd think. Get out while you can.
But Lu Xun says no. He refuses to move.
Why? That seems incredibly risky.
because he's playing mind games again.
Yeah.
He figured a hasty retreat would just scream panic. It would invite Wei to chase them down, knowing they were weakened and demoralized. He needed to project calm, confidence.
How do you fake confidence when your plan is toast and your army's sick?
Through theater, almost. He orders his troops to start planting beans and wheat right outside the camp gates, like they were settling in for the long haul.
Planting crops? Seriously?
Seriously. And then he and his generals are seen just casually playing archery games right out in the open.
He's putting on a show for Weisspies.
Exactly. Sending a clear message to Kaorui. Yeah, you saw my plan. So what? I'm still here. I'm ready. I'm not scared. And it worked. That appearance of leisure, of readiness, it made Kaorui hesitate. Gave Lu Xun the breathing room he needed.
That's incredible nerve.
Isn't it? Then Lu Xun executes this brilliant decoy. He has Zhu Gejin make a show of defending with boats, while Lu Xun marches his main army off towards Yangyang, making it look like a major new offensive threat.
And Kaorui buys it.
Well, Kaorui knew Lu Xun wasn't someone to underestimate. When his own generals wanted to pursue Lu Xun's retreating main force, Kaorui stopped them. He apparently said Lu Xun was the equal of Sun Tzu. High praise.
So Lu Xun gets his army out clean.
Masterfully. Retreated without significant losses even after his plan was completely compromised. And crucially, the Eastern Front basically ends in a stalemate, which, going back, totally justifies Sima Yi sticking to his orders. Hold firm, do not fight.
Right, so Sima Yi's patience paid off. It was validated by the Emperor's strategy. But Kongming can't afford a stalemate, can he? He needs to break Sima Yi's defense. He has to force a decisive battle.
Exactly. The pressure shifts back west. Kongming realizes he can't just keep raiding and poking. Sima Yi won't budge. So Kongming shifts tactics dramatically. He starts planning for permanence at Qishan.
Permanence? What do you mean?
He starts settling the land. He orders his Shu soldiers and the local Wei civilians to start farming together. Allocated plots. One part military, two parts civilian.
Whoa, that's not just logistics, that's like colonization almost.
It's a massive strategic move. Sources say it actually worked quite well, the locals were reportedly content, things were peaceful. But for Wei, this is an existential threat. Kongming isn't just visiting, he's putting down roots, turning contested land into Shu territory.
That must have set off alarm bells in the Wei camp.
Big time. Sima Yi's own son, Sima Shi, sees the danger immediately. He basically pleads with his father, we have to fight him now. Before he digs in permanently.
But Sima Yi
still refuses. Sticks to the emperor's orders. He even quotes a sage, something like, small impatience leads to ruin of great plans. He will not be baited.
Okay, so farming isn't enough to draw him out. What's Kongming's next move? Back to psychology.
Yep, one last try. He sends Wei Yan, probably the most aggressive Shu general, to the Wei camp gates. His specific instruction, wave that lost golden helmet around. Sima Yi's symbol of personal disgrace.
Ouch. Rubbing salt in the wound.
Trying to provoke him personally. But Sima Yi just endures it. Quote scripture, stays behind his walls. The taunting fails.
So, patience failed, farming failed, psychological warfare failed. Kongming must be getting desperate.
Desperate times call for ingenious measures. Psychological warfare gives way to, well, let's call it explosive solutions. Kongming sets his ultimate trap. The Hulu Valley Trap, also called Changfang Valley. And this one is designed specifically for Sima Yi himself.
Okay, this sounds big. What did it involve?
It was incredibly elaborate. First, the physical preparations. Wooden fences built to channel movement, deep trenches dug, and huge amounts of dry reeds, wood, flammable materials stockpiled all through the valley.
Setting the stage for a fire trap.
A massive fire trap.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really innovative, maybe even terrifying for the time. Kongming introduces a new technology.
Which is?
Landmines. By eye. Hidden explosives buried all over the valley floor. Imagine facing that for the first time. An enemy that can make the very ground explode beneath your feet.
It's a whole new level of warfare. How did he plan to get Sima Yi into this death valley?
With bait and signals. He set up specific visual markers at the valley entrance, 7-star flags to be seen during the day, and 7 lamps to guide at night.
And the bait.
Wei Yan again, plan was. Wei Yan engages the Wei forces, pretends to be defeated, and then leads the pursuing army, hopefully Sima Yi, directly towards those flags or lamps, right into the valley.
Okay, that's the main lore. But Kongming was always thorough, wasn't he?
Always layers upon layers. He knew he also had to manage the perception among the ordinary Wei soldiers. So he sent another general, Gao Shang, on a different mission.
What was that?
Gao Shang was to take small groups, maybe just 20, 30, 50 at a time, of those famous wood oxen and flowing horses, the Mini Liuma transport devices.
His advanced supply carriers.
Exactly. But load them with only small amounts of grain and basically parade them around where small way patrols could easily capture them.
Why waste those valuable machines on tiny, easy captures?
To keep the rank and file happy and distracted, give the regular way soldiers lots of small, easy victories, lots of easily captured grain. They feel like they're winning, they're getting loot. It stops them looking too closely or reporting back anything unusual about the main Shu movements towards the valley trap. It scatters their focus.
Brilliant psychological diversion for the common troops.
Keeps them busy finding shiny objects while the big trap is set for the leadership. And eventually, the pressure inside the Wei camp just boils over. Two Wei generals, Xiao Hui and Xiao Huo, they see these seemingly scattered Shu forces, these easy grain captures, and they finally convince Sima Yi to let them attack.
Sima Yi finally gives in.
He does. Even though he's deeply suspicious, he reportedly mutters something like, "This must be another of Kong Ming's schemes. The pressure from his own officers is too much." He authorizes them to pursue with 5,000 troops each. The opening moves are really interesting because Sima Yi shows this surprising level of restraint.
That's a great place to start.
So things kick off. Wei generals Summer Hu and Summer Hu He, they score a win. They capture some Shu soldiers. But the real prize wasn't the soldiers, was it?
No, not really. The big win was logistical. They snag those famous supply carts, the wooden oxen and gliding horses.
The Muni Lima.
Exactly. And you have to understand, these weren't just carts. They were Kongmings, like signature invention, almost automated, keeping his army fed miles from home.
So capturing them hurt Shu's supplies.
Definitely hurt supplies, but it was also a psychological hit, right? It chipped away at Kongming's image of, you know, technological superiority.
Okay, so Sima Yi grabs these soldiers, interrogates them, and they tell him Kongming is, what, spreading his forces out?
Yeah.
Getting ready to farm?
Yeah, that's the story they give. That Kongming's basically slowing down, decentralizing, prepping for a long haul, maybe setting up farms.
And Sima Yi's reaction is, well, it's unexpected. He lets them go.
He does. Instead of, you know, executions or more intense grilling, he just releases them.
Okay, hold on. That seems incredibly risky. Why would Sima Yi, this master strategist, just trust what enemy prisoners say and let them walk?
Well, because his focus shifted. It wasn't about immediate military gain right then. It was about undermining the enemy's will to fight.
Oh.
He lets them go and specifically tells them, go spread the word about Wei's leniency and kindness. That's the phrase used. Guan Hao Rinch.
Leniency and kindness.
What?
While planning something else entirely.
Exactly. He's sowing doubt, maybe making the Shu soldiers think, hey, maybe capture isn't so bad. It softens them up.
So it's like feigned benevolence to make them drop their guard.
That's
pretty brilliant. And devious.
Oh, absolutely. And Sima Yi even points to his inspiration. He says, essentially, this is Lu Meng's plan to take Jingzhou.
Right. Lu Meng famously pretended to be sick, disarmed his troops, looked totally non-threatening.
And then launched a massive surprise attack that completely worked. So by invoking Lu Meng, Sima Yi is sending a message, probably directly to Kongming.
What message?
I'm playing the long game, the psychological game. I'm going to wear you down slowly. The goal, explicitly stated, was to Shi Bi Zan Xin diminish their fighting spirit.
Wow. Okay, so Sima Yi signals long game. And Kongming sees it immediately. And he realizes,
right.
What? He can't afford that.
Precisely. Kongming knows he can't win a war of attrition against wise resources. If Sima Yi wants patience, Kongming needs a knockout blow. Now.
So Sima Yi's long game becomes the trigger for Kongming's deadly short game.
You got it. Kongming pivots. He recognizes Sima Yi's patience, his reliance on the long haul, is now the thing to exploit. So He starts laying the trap. Shangfang Valley.
Right. How does he set it up?
He gets General Gao Sheng to start moving grain through the valley, but crucially, feigning regular transport, using those Muni Lima, the wooden oxen, as very visible, very tempting bait.
And making it look like Wei can easily intercept them.
Exactly. For about 2 weeks, Wei forces keep winning these little skirmishes. They capture a few carts here, a few soldiers there. Sima Yi's feeling pretty good, thinking he's slowly bleeding Shu dry.
Okay, so the constant small wins build Sima Yi's confidence. But what was the final piece? The thing that made him commit everything to the valley?
It was another piece of information, supposedly from captured Shu soldiers. The ultimate lie.
What did they say this time?
They told Sima Yi that Kongming himself, the great strategist, had personally moved his main camp just 10 li, maybe 3 or 4 miles, west of Shangfang Valley, and that he was there personally overseeing the grain stockpiling.
The idea that calming the mastermind is now reduced to basically guarding supplies.
Exactly. It played right into Sima Yi's perception, maybe his ego. The idea that his rival was getting desperate, it was just too tempting to resist.
So Sima Yi thinks, okay, I've got him strategically cornered, and he comes up with his own plan.
He does, a seemingly brilliant countermove. He decides to fake a huge attack on Qishan.
Qishan being Shu's main base of operations, right?
Correct. The logic, from Sima Yi's perspective, was sound. Attack Qishan, and all the supporting Shu forces will have to rush back to defend it.
Leaving Shengfang Valley, where he thinks Kongming and the Grain are?
Totally exposed.
Yeah.
His plan was to then sweep into the valley, burn all that supposed grain, and basically cut the Shu army in two, make them, in his words, headless and tailless, Shi Bisho Wei Buji.
Cut off the command from the supply lines? Brutal.
And even his own son, Sima Shi, who was known for being sharp, apparently praised the plan. Confirmed its genius.
So Sima Yi is riding high, he's confident, he personally leads the attack force into the valley, and he brings his sons, Sima Shi and Sima Zhao, with him.
Yeah, that's a key detail. He's so sure of success, he brings his heirs into the kill zone.
He gets to the valley entrance and finds Wei Yan there, apparently with just a few troops, matching the intel.
Right. And Wei Yan puts up just a token fight. The text says, not three clashes, Bu Sheng Senhi. Like, barely engages at all.
Before turning and running deeper into the valley.
Exactly. The perfect lure. Sima Yi sees this as the final desperate retreat. He orders his main force in. He does pause, sends scouts ahead just to be sure.
And the scouts come back saying,
no ambushers, just lots of grass huts.
Grass huts, suggesting grain storage. That seals it for Sima Yi.
That's the final confirmation he thinks he needs. He commits everything, his men, his sons, his own reputation, drives them all deep into this narrow, enclosed valley floor.
And then boom, then the trap springs. Suddenly noise erupts from the cliffs all around them. The entrance is sealed off fire arrows, maybe burning logs rolled down.
Panic.
Complete chaos. Then comes the ordnance. Kongming had prepared rockets, fire arrows streaming down, and landmines delay. They buried explosives.
Landmines.
In the third century.
Well, explosive devices triggered by pressure fuses, yes. Maybe gunpowder based. Yeah. The text uses delay. And crucially, those grass huts, they weren't full of grain.
They were just kindling.
Exactly.
Wow.
Covered in dry brush, oil, maybe. They ignite instantly from the fire arrows and the exploding mines. The whole valley becomes a furnace.
Oh my God. Checkmate. Sima Yi trapped, his army burning. How's he described?
The novel says he was speechless and helpless, Jing De Shuzu, who utterly stunned. He gets off his horse, grabs his two sons, hugs them, and just cries out, we're all going to die here.
Wow, that's a raw moment. The calculating strategist completely broken, facing death with his children. Kongming has won.
It absolutely looks like it. Total victory for Shu. The war seems over. But then something completely unexpected happened.
The weather.
At that exact moment of Sima Yi's despair, the sources describe the sudden dramatic shift. A huge wind picks up.
Okay.
Then dark energy filling the sky. Hey, Ki Man Kong, ominous. Followed by a massive clap of thunder.
And then the rain.
And then a torrential downpour. A Zhu Yu kingpin. Just sheets of rain coming out of nowhere.
Instantly putting out the inferno.
Instantly. Douses the massive fire, cools everything down. And those landmines, the delay. Suddenly useless in the mud and water.
Unbelievable. Pure luck. Or fate.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Sima Yi, ever the pragmatist, doesn't waste time pondering. The fire's out, the exit's no longer blocked by flames.
He uses the chaos to charge out.
Charges right out, links back up with his reinforcements, Zhang Hu and Li Shen, who are waiting outside. He escapes.
So Sima Yi and his sons survive the fire trap. But the overall situation, it's still pretty bad for Wei, right? He might be alive, but his plan failed.
Absolutely. While he was trapped in the valley, Kongming's other forces weren't idle. Sima Yi's main camp back at Wainan, captured by Shu.
Exactly as Kongming had planned. The distraction worked, even if the killing blow didn't land.
Right. The trap partially succeeded. It drew Sima Yi away. And those Wei troops Sima Yi had sent to attack Qishan, the ones meant to draw Shu forces away.
What happened to them?
Total disaster. They were routed. The reports filtering back were horrific, something like 10 out of every 8 or 9 soldiers were killed or wounded. A catastrophic defeat for that wing of the Wei army. They fled north across the Wei River.
So even with the rain saving Sima Yi personally, it was still a massive tactical win for Shu overall. Kongming must have been But, well, how did he react?
Imagine it. Kong Ming's up on the mountains, watching. He sees the fire start, the valley ignite. He must have thought, I've done it, it's over. Jubilation.
And then the news comes. Miraculous rain, Sima Yi escaped.
Yeah. And his reaction is captured in probably one of the most famous lines in the entire novel. He looks up at the sky, sighs, and says,
Man proposes, heaven disposes.
Man proposes, heaven disposes, it cannot be forced. Mu Shi Zairen, Cheng Shi Zetian.
It just perfectly sums up the agony, right? The genius strategist whose perfect plan, meticulously crafted, is just undone by sheer random chance.
It's heartbreaking, in a way. Mm. And the novel itself drives the point home. Right after that quote, there's a poem.
Oh, yeah. What does it say?
It basically laments that if Kong Ming's fire trap had worked, if the rain hadn't come, the empire would never have eventually fallen to the Jin Dynasty.
Which was founded by?
Sima Yi's descendants.
Yeah.
His son, Sima Shi, and especially his grandson, Sima Yan. So the novel explicitly links that downpour, not just to saving Sima Yi's life, but to saving the entire future dynasty. The fate of China turned on that rainstorm.
Wow. Okay, so after this near-death experience and the tactical hit, Sima Yi shifts gears completely, doesn't he?
He has to. He retreats north of the Wei River, burns a floating bridge behind him, cuts off pursuit, and then he lays down the law for his own troops.
What's the new strategy?
Absolute defense. He issues a strict order. Anyone who even suggests going out to fight Kong Ming will be executed. No more engagements. Period.
He knows he can't outmaneuver Kong Ming in the open field.
Exactly. He realizes his only advantage now is time and resources. Patience becomes his weapon. He tells his general, Guo Wai, look, if Kong Ming pushes east along the mountains towards Wungong, we're still in trouble. That's an aggressive move. Mm. But if Kong Ming stops, digs in at Wuzong Plains, Wuzhong Yuan, which is a more static defensive position, then Wei is safe.
And the scouts come back.
Scouts report, Kong Ming has indeed halted. He's setting up camp at Wuzong Plains, preparing for a longer confrontation, focusing on logistics again.
How does Sima Yi interpret that?
It's fascinating. He doesn't credit his own escape or strategy. Hmm. He tells his men this outcome is due to the great fortune of the Emperor Great Wei, Da Wei Hong Di Ji Hong Fu Ye. He sees it as heaven-favoring Wei, not his own brilliance.
Humility, or maybe just recognizing the role of luck.
Probably a bit of both. And his final command captures his entire philosophy from this point on. Firmly defend without fighting. When they delay, they will naturally change. Basically, let them sit there. Let time, logistics, maybe Kong Ming's own declining health do the work.
The ultimate passive victory. Let your enemy defeat himself.
It's the triumph of patience over aggressive genius, forced by near annihilation and maybe a bit of rain. Kong Ming needs a fight. Sima Yi knows it, so he's just dug in, playing for time.
Right, the classic firmly holding strategy. So Kong Ming decides he needs to provoke him. And his method is, savage is a good word.
He sends a box.
He does. A large box. And inside, well, let's just say it wasn't chocolates.
No. It was a woman's headdress, a paigru, and plain white silk clothes.
Exactly. The message is crystal clear, incredibly insulting.
It's basically saying, if you won't come out and fight, if you won't decide the male from the female, as the sources put it, then wear these.
Because you're acting like a woman hiding in your dirt hole. I mean, talk about psychological warfare.
The aim was obviously to sting Sima Yi's pride, right? And maybe even more, the pride of his generals, get them riled up.
Force a mistake. Force a rash engagement. But Sima Yi, his reaction is just masterful.
He doesn't lose his temper.
Not at all. The sources say he feigned a laugh, took the clothes, mm-hmm. and was actually really polite to the messenger, treated him well.
Total control. And then he does something really clever. He flips the situation.
Right. He ignores the insult, ignores military talk, and turns it into an intelligence gathering opportunity.
Yeah.
But not about troops.
No, about Kong Ning himself, his personal habits.
Exactly. He asks the messenger, point blank, how's Kong Ming sleeping? What's he eating? How much work is he personally handling? The sources use the term Shi Zi Fan Jin, the complexity, the sheer volume of his tasks.
He's not asking about strategy. He's probing for burnout.
He's looking for signs of exhaustion, physical limits.
And the messenger, maybe trying to impress Sima Yi with Kong Ming's diligence, just spills everything.
Yeah, he tells him Kong Ming wakes early and sleeps late. Yeah. He personally reviews punishments, even minor ones like 20 lashes.
20 lashes. He's handling that himself.
Apparently so. And the kicker.
Yeah.
He's barely eating. Less than a few sheng of grain a day, which is, you know, not much fuel.
Wow. So Sima Yi gets this report.
And it's like a light bulb goes on. Strategic gold. He immediately sees Kong Ming's fatal flaw.
He turns to his officers and basically says,
Kong Ming eats little and manages much. Can he last long? Shi Fan.
Eating little, managing much. That phrase just cuts right to the heart of it, doesn't it?
It's everything. Sima Yi isn't analyzing troop numbers here. He's analyzing Kong Ming's health, his sustainability. He realizes Kong Ming is already defeated, in a way.
Defeated by his own workload.
Exactly. By the unsustainable pressure he's putting on himself. Sima Yi figures, I don't need to beat him in battle. I just need to wait.
It's like a masterclass in strategic patience, based on assessing the opponent's, well, managerial limits?
Right. If the leader is doing every little thing, you're not being diligent, you're just heading for a crash. Sima Yi saw that stress point and knew time was on his side.
And here's the kicker. The messenger goes back, tells Kong Ming what Sima Yi said.
And Kong Ming doesn't argue, doesn't get angry, he just sighs.
And says, he truly knows me.
Yeah, it's an admission. He knows Sima Yi is right, which tells you this wasn't exactly news to Kong Ming, or at least to those around him.
So the external enemy identifies the problem, but there was already internal pressure about this.
Oh, absolutely. We get this amazing scene where one of his own subordinates, Yang Yang, basically gives him the same critique.
Yang Yang calls him out on the micromanagement.
Directly. Points out that Kong Ming is personally checking ledgers. Shengzi Xiao Bushu, things a prime minister probably shouldn't be bogged down with.
It sounds like a modern HBR article or something.
It really does. And Yang Yang uses this brilliant analogy. He says, governing is like running a household.
Okay.
The master, the head of the house, should be resting, eating well, overseeing things. You have servants to till the fields, maids to cook the meals. That's delegation.
Right. Division of labor.
Exactly. If the master tries to do everything themselves, plowing, cooking, cleaning, what happens?
They collapse.
They become physically worn and mentally exhausted, Xing Pi Shen Kun. The whole system fails because the person at the center breaks down.
That's incredibly insightful. He's basically saying, you're going to burn out and take us all down with you.
Pretty much.
Huh.
And he even uses historical examples to back it up.
Like who?
Like the Prime Minister Bing Ji, who famously ignored a dead body on the road, but was deeply concerned about an ox panting too heavily.
Meaning focus on the system's health, not every single incident.
Precisely. And Chen Ping, another famous minister, who, when asked about specific grain reserve numbers, just said, someone else is in charge of that. He knew his job was big picture, not granular detail.
So delegate, focus on strategy, not spreadsheets.
That was Yang Yang's point.
Mm-hmm.
But Kong Ming, his reaction is pure emotion.
He doesn't take the advice.
He cries. He defends himself by talking about the immense responsibility placed on him by the late Emperor Liu Bei, that dying trust.
Ah, the weight of expectation.
He genuinely seems to believe that nobody else could possibly be as dedicated. He's afraid that if he lets go, even a little, the whole mission, the restoration of the Han, will just collapse.
So his greatest strength, his incredible diligence and sense of duty, becomes his Achilles heel.
Exactly. The very thing that made him Kong Ming, the strategic genius, is now the critical vulnerability that Sima Yi spots from across the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
His inability to manage his own workload becomes a fatal military weakness.
Wow. Okay, so while Kong Ming is struggling with internal management of his tasks, Sima Yi has a different internal management problem, right?
Oh, yeah. Big time. His own generals, they got those petticoats and they are furious.
They want blood. They want to fight. Nah.
Absolutely. Their honor has been insulted in the most public way possible. They're demanding Sima Yi drop the defensive strategy and attack. Restore their pride.
So now Sima Yi has to manage his team's emotions and impatience. How does he do it without looking weak?
Pure political theater. Genius level stuff. He tells his generals basically, look, I want to fight too, but, you know, the emperor, Cao Rui, gave me direct orders, Ming Zhao, to stand firm. My hands are tied.
Okay. Plausible deniability, but the generals are still pushing.
They are. So Sima Yi says, okay, fine, I'll ask the emperor for permission. He then writes this incredibly dramatic formal request, memorial to Cao Rui.
And in it, he basically says,
Your Majesty, we've been profoundly humiliated by these garments. My men are enraged. Please, please let us go out and fight.
But he doesn't actually want permission.
Not a chance. He knows fighting now plays right into Kong Ming's hands. This is all for show.
And someone on the emperor's side figures this out.
Yes. One of Cao Rui's advisors, a guy named Jin Pai, reads the memorial and instantly gets it. He tells the emperor, essentially, Sima Yi has absolutely no intention of fighting.
So what's the point of the letter, then?
Jin Pai nails it. He says Sima Yi is just looking for a clear, undeniable imperial decree forbidding him to fight. He wants the emperor to be the one to say no.
Ah, so he uses the emperor's authority to shut his own generals down.
Exactly. It's a brilliant delegation upwards. Shimpi says he's doing it to control the hearts of the generals, Ingezu, Zhengzi, Jiayir. He makes the emperor the bad guy who's holding them back, while Sima Yi gets to look like he wanted to fight but was overruled.
That is some next-level management. Keeps his strategy intact, keeps his generals sort of happy, and avoids looking cowardly himself.
Flawless execution. Shimpi gets sent to Sima Yi's camp, carrying the imperial decree that says, absolutely no fighting, stand firm.
Sima Yi receives it publicly.
Yeah, shows it to his fuming generals, see, emperor's orders, and then pulls Shinpai aside privately.
And says,
you truly know my heart. Zhongsan si in Qinia, acknowledging that Shinpai saw right through the performance.
Incredible. The contrast is just so stark, isn't it? Kongmin is drowning in minor tasks he won't delegate.
While Sima Yi is masterfully delegating the responsibility for enforcing his strategy all the way up to the emperor, managing his command structure, not just his to-do list.
Did Kongmin figure out what Sima Yi was doing with that whole request to fight charade?
Oh, immediately. When word gets back to the Shu camp about Sima Yi asking for permission and getting denied, Kongmin just laughs.
He knew it was a trick.
Yeah, he points out the fundamental military principle. A general outside the camp is not bound by the sovereign's command. Jiang Zaiwai, Jun Ming Yu Sung Bu Shu.
Meaning Sima Yu could have fought if you really wanted to, regardless of orders.
Precisely. Kong Ming says the whole request was just for show of force in Shi Pun Yu Zong Yer, a performance to appease his own ranks. He recognized the political genius even as he was its target.
But recognizing Sima Yi's brilliance doesn't help his own situation, does it? Time was ticking.
No, it doesn't. His own clock was running out, largely due to that burnout Sima Yi diagnosed.
Yeah.
The war of attrition against his own health. He was losing.
And then came the final blow, strategically.
Yeah, devastating news arrives. Fei Yi comes from Chengdu. The coordinated attack by their allies, Eastern Wu, it had failed miserably.
The attack that was supposed to draw Wei forces away, relieve the pressure.
That's the one. Man Chong had apparently burned Wu's supply lines. Their plans were intercepted. Total collapse of that second front.
And Kong Ming hears this.
And he just crumbles, physically collapses. The sources say he lamented that his old illness has returned and he feared he wouldn't survive this time. The last strategic hope was gone.
The body finally gives out under the strain.
It seems so. That very night, he goes out, looks at the stars, the three terraces cluster Santai Qing. He sees bad omens.
What kind of omens?
The guest star is unnaturally bright, the main star is dim, obscured, and the supporting stars are faint. It's all wrong. And he knows what it means.
He says,
my life is known. He accepts that his time is up, based on the stars.
But his officers aren't ready to give up on him, right?
No. Yang Wei, his loyal subordinate, suggests a last resort, a ritual, the prayer to the Northern Dipper, Qirangxi.
A magical ritual to extend his life.
That was the idea. The belief was, if he could keep his personal life lamp, Din Ming Deng, lit continuously for 7 days and nights, surrounded by other lamps in a specific pattern.
Seven large lamps, 49 small ones.
Right. If that central lamp stayed lit for 7 days, he'd gain another cycle, another 12 years of life, enough time maybe to finish his mission.
It's a desperate measure, shows how much was riding on him personally.
Absolutely. And you see his meticulous nature again in the setup. Everything has to be perfect. He performs the prayer, focusing all his will.
And for six nights, it works. The lamp stays lit.
For six agonizing nights, yes, the flame holds. A symbol of his own flickering life, maybe. But on the sixth night, disaster.
What happens?
Wei Yan, another general, probably exhausted and panicked himself, bursts into the tent.
Why? What's the emergency?
He's reporting that Wei scouting troops are approaching the camp. There's imminent danger.
Okay, urgent news.
But in his haste, his fear, his rush, he stumbles. He accidentally kicks over the arrangement.
No, not the main lamp.
The main lamp. The central life lamp. Okay. Extinguished instantly.
Oh, the irony. After all that effort, all that control.
Yeah.
Undone by a clumsy accident.
It's just tragic, isn't it? A moment of battlefield chaos intrudes on this sacred controlled space and destroys everything.
How does Kong Ming react? Does he rage? Despair?
No. He just accepts it, drops his sword, sighs, and delivers that final heartbreaking line.
Which is?
Death and life are decided by fate. They cannot be prevented by prayer.
Shen Yu Ming, Buki De Erong Yu.
Wow. The ultimate strategist, the man who tried to control everything, finally yields to something uncontrollable, fate, or maybe just an accident.
Exactly. Sima Yi's prediction came true. Kong Ming couldn't last. Not because of a Wei attack, but because his own system, his own body, finally broke down, leading to this, well, this fatal accidental interruption.